dubbed the John Stewart of the Arab world. He became the creator and host of the first political satire show in the Middle East. Tickets for this all-ages event on Monday, April 3rd, with Bassem Youssef are available now at portland5.com. It's 7:59. More Talk Radio next.
Please join us on Saturday, March 25th for an Archives Database Edit-a-thon and party. This event will run from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. We are recruiting current and past KBOO volunteers and listeners who hold knowledge of KBOO's 49-year history. And we are recruiting archivists, librarians, and any other person that enjoys information seeking and data entry to document this collective knowledge. This event is free and open to the public, but we need you to register so we can plan for the event. Find out more by emailing archive@kboo.fm or online at kboo.fm/editparty2017.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Community Radio. Here in Portland is 90.7, in Hood River 91.9, and in Corvallis, Albany 104.3, and via the World Wide Web it is kboo.fm. I'm Cecil Prescott, and this is More Talk Radio, and we are pleased to have with us a guest who's been with us before, and certainly no stranger to this community, who has been an activist for many years, and she is Kathleen Sadat. And ostensibly, I think we were able to get her here by asking her to talk about her experience with the, what is it, COAB. Too many acronyms and yes. Stuff like that. But also, you know, this is Women's History Month, and I appreciate Kathleen Sadat as making history as well as being a key observant of history. So we'll begin with talking about the police, and if other things come along, that will be great.
Thank you, Cecil. Good morning.
So, okay, I got it wrong. So what was, was COAB, I suppose?
I'm not sure it's dead yet, mm-hmm. but it was the Community Oversight Advisory Board. Mm-hmm. It was put together as a part of the settlement agreement between the City of Portland and the Department of Justice. It was unique. It is unique in that it has a formal structure that allows input from the community that must be considered by the DOJ. Must be considered. So the format is something like, well, this is what was supposed to happen.
Yes.
You had a board that was sitting that was looking at a couple of things. What existing policy in the police bureau, commenting on that. Also listening to people who had request information or wanted to give the board some idea of what was going on in their lives vis-a-vis the relationship with the police. The main thing was to get people giving input to the relationship in order to try to improve that relationship. So there are a lot of pieces here to juggle for that board. The board started off with several disadvantages. One was the selection process was not standardized, and it was not the skill set of the design to ensure that an individual board member was vetted, that is, that was appropriate for the board. So board members came to the COAB with different ideas of what it was and what it was supposed to do. So the second, I don't want to say failure, but I guess I'd have to say failure, was that there was no real training for the board in terms of what should be their goals, their focus, and how they should go about being a board. So, you know, most boards get training. Yes. And one of the things they get trained on is how to be a board. They also were not trained on or given information on their role as public officials. Because as advisors to a government entity, they have a different set of responsibilities than just being a citizen. There are ethics involved, and there are things you can and cannot do. And most of the things that early on when I came in June, and they'd been meeting since February of 2015, I came on in June of 2015, and that's when they found out about being public officials. It was right before I started, I think a couple of days before I started, that they got their first full review of the settlement agreement itself. So by the time you have a board that is, I would say, confused, I would say without a core that you know, around which they're working, but you still have people who are, some who think their job is to criticize the police, some who think it is to admonish the white community, some who think it is to read every police policy and change that. I mean, it was so very, very mixed. In the course of all this, as we start bringing this board together, and there was a lot of work done to do that, we start to have the interruptions, the demonstrations from a group of people who, at first, I tried to engage. I went and said, okay, you're here. Tell us what you want. Don't just come and complain about things that happened 10, 15, 20 years ago, because that was the agenda of one person. There were people who showed up who screamed. There were people who showed up who seemed to have no agenda, no request from the board. There were other people who showed up and gave great input. There were people who showed up and talked about the data, talked about what they saw. But there was an imbalance in the room that I think kept a lot of other people away, because they didn't want to be engaged in what they saw as a hostile environment. So that's a brief overview of me, what I stepped into.
What you step into.
Yeah.
And you also, I mean, there seems to be, when I began this interview and I spoke of COAB as in the past tense, it might have been because of the confusion,
right,
of what it is, what it was, and your observation that there was initially no vetting of board members and no formal training. Mm-hmm. It seems as if it was set up to fail.
I think that implies intent. I don't think that was the intent. Mm-hmm. I think that what you had was a group of people who came together, who tried to put together a board with a grand vision, because the vision of having the community input is why I came out of retirement to take the job. But none of them had the skill set to build a board. Okay? Yeah. So you can say it was set up to fail. That, again, implies intent. I don't think that was the intent. Mm-hmm. There are other structural pieces that I think would speak more to avoiding responsibility and a lack of accountability on the part of some of the people who have decision-making power in this process. So, there's nobody in charge. Okay? The DOJ can't tell the city what to do. It can advise, it could stop the city from doing some things, but it can't say you must do this way. The city put the responsibility for the functioning of the COAB in the city attorney's office. It had absolutely no business there. And I've said that in public. I've written it down. The city attorney's office is in a position of having to defend anybody on the board who is, you know, comes under the is attacked as a public official and who is shown to be doing their duty and not doing something wrong. There are also the people who represent the police department and the city itself. That's too many roles, and it is not designed to manage a people-oriented entity. It is a defense entity for the city, so it had no business there. So my dealings in terms of trying to get something done were complicated by the fact that I'm looking at people who are continuously trying to defend the city when the whole existence of the board is a risk-taking effort. These are not risk-taking people. The responses out of Charlie Hales' office were unsatisfactory, except for one person who stuck with me and who helped me through that. And that was the person who was doing his police work out of his office. And if it were not for her, some significant things would not have happened because there was no one else to make the decision. So what you have is a good idea poorly implemented. So what has happened is the demonstrations got so bad that the board really couldn't operate anymore. I had given my year that I promised when I went on, and I just said, "Hey, I'm out of here."
That's an o'clock.
Yeah, right. and so they're supposed to be regrouping. My concern is that there's not been the kind of dialogue, or at least not that I know of, the kind of dialogue I would like to see between the city and the community as to what they would like that board to look like. And when I say community, I don't mean just the heads of the Albina Ministerial Alliance or Coalition. Mm-hmm. I mean some of the other people, like Richard Brown, who's worked with the police for years and years and years. I think they should also talk to some of the people who, from the police bureau, who were on the board. I think they should talk with the institutions, the NAACP and the Urban League. I think they should talk with the mental health agencies because those two groups were the ones greatest affected by what was going on with COAB. Although there was no direction to address race, the focus was mental health. Within mental health, there are issues of race and culture, language, tradition. So that broad rubric of mental health should include everyone, but especially a focus on race, which our members of the board were doing very well. They were saying, no, what are the stats on Black people? What were the stats on this? And insisting that they be captured.
You're listening to KBOO. This is More Talk Radio. We're speaking with Kathleen Sadat, former chair?
Yeah, chair. And that's chair. Another structural problem.
Of COAB. And if you, we're going to continue our conversation, and we invite you with questions or comments to give us a call at our radio station. And the numbers here are 503-231-8187. So I'm wondering if we could stop and give us your understanding of this settlement. Who were the people a part of this settlement? DOJ, the Department of Justice, and the city out of the mayor's office, and where does groups like the Albina Ministerial Alliance?
Okay, the Albina Ministerial Alliance was the catalyst. They and the mental health agency said, I don't remember which ones, I just remember that they together approached the Department of Justice and said, hey, we got a problem here. Department of Justice came in and said, hey, you got a problem here. The Albina Ministerial Alliance was given a special relationship to the settlement agreement in that they are a friend is almost like a friend of the court, but it's like they carry significant weight in the process. Okay. So there's the Albana Ministerial Alliance, there's the City of Portland, there's the DOJ that's supposed to oversee it, there's the COCL, the group that was hired from Chicago that hired me as the chair, and we can get back to that, mm-hmm. because that was a problem. And then there's the police union, okay? Mm-hmm. None of those roles were clearly defined, which creates another structural problem and an interface problem. If you don't have clearly defined roles, then people take on what they can do, not necessarily what they need to do. Mm-hmm. I think that created problems, especially when you have the union doing things that are antithetical to the purpose of the COAB. Okay, so the whole idea was to reform, go back to, the whole idea was to help reform the police bureau by input from the community. And then you go somewhere and you see a big sign that says Blue Lives Matter, right in the middle of this. And when I talked to someone at the police bureau, they said, we didn't do that, the union did it. Okay, so there's no control over the union, and there's no defined role for the union except to say no.
When you say except to say no, what do you mean? No to what?
Anything, whatever they choose. Okay, that's the same. That's a lack of clarity around the Albana Ministerial Alliance participation in process. Now, as I see them, they are invaluable in terms of oversight.
Yes.
Okay, so giving some direction, pointing out where a hole might be, asking significant questions about process and where things are going and who's in charge of whatever and what's the data that supports this here, okay? But I don't think we ever really got there. We had several meetings with, you know, all of us together, and it was very difficult because the role of COCL, that is the chair and the chair's office, was not that well defined. So I could go so far, and then I had to wait because I did not have the authority to say it will be this way. And since nobody had the authority to say it will be this way, things would just stop.
So I want to go back to something you said at the very beginning, which when Cecil asked, was this set up to fail? And you said, well, not necessarily, because that speaks to intention. Mm-hmm. So my question then is, why was this process never clearly defined, and who at the very onset could have done that?
Hmm. That's a very good question. I think there is an arrogance in people who think they know what they're doing when they don't. Mm-hmm. Look at who was putting it together. And no, I'm not... You know, I've worked with these people. I like them. A lot of them are just beyond belief in terms of integrity. Not everybody, but a lot of them. So, but you have lawyers putting mm-hmm. together an entity that is made up of community members. But you have no one at the table who is a trainer in board development. Mm-hmm. You have no one at the table who is a process-oriented person for community events. You have no one at the table who is speaking to the need for training, how to best to train, especially on the ethical aspects of being a public official. But I don't think it occurs to some people that you need that.
So you had a, what I will call a one-dimensional groupthink failure. And by one-dimensional groupthink failure, what I mean is a bunch of people who come from similar backgrounds and with a slight amount of arrogance, and I'll be generous. And so they have blinders on, they have tunnel vision, and they can only see one aspect of this rather than having a holistic view. And they're missing some critical parts.
I'd say it almost that way, mm-hmm. not quite, because there were people there who have some knowledge of community. Mm-hmm. They weren't necessarily the people who know how to train.
Right.
Or missing. To, okay. Yeah. So So I don't think somebody said, let's put this together and make it a mess.
Right.
I think there was nobody there to say, this is a mess.
Okay.
Okay.
And well, that's what I mean, yes, by groupthink.
Yes. 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 Mm-hmm. But I don't think it was like, okay, we're all going to do this and make it fail.
Right.
I think there was also an attitude about some of the people who were making noise in the community and no work done to try to listen to them. But by the time I got there, my sense was they expected not to be listened to, and even when they were being listened to, didn't realize they were being listened to. That's my experience. Mm-hmm. Some were just, they saw their job. Some people from the attendees, and I won't say they represented the community. Mm-hmm. Some of the attendees saw their job as, how do I attack next? Mm-hmm. And there was no balance in the room.
And no attempt to clarify, your point is valid, this is not the right venue for that.
We could do that. I could say that.
Okay.
And so, I did. And what I got was resistance. Okay?
And not, okay.
Okay. Now, so any group that wants to work together, mm-hmm, has to have some rules.
Yes.
And the role of the chair is to enforce those rules. Now, here's the mistake. Here's another mistake that, mm-hmm, I think is significant. I was hired on as the chair for the committee, for the board. I should have been hired on as the executive director, and they should have selected their own chair. Mm-hmm. That would have been a much better functioning entity. Then I would be the person who supported them and gave them information and worked with the chair to make sure that the direction was clear. But, uh-huh, unless you have all that upfront work,
yes,
it's not going to work anyway. My concern right now is that I'm wondering if they're trying to fix the wrong thing, because I don't know what the real fixing is that's going on there. Uh-huh. And my concern is they're like the guy who lost his keys down the block, but he's looking out right here by the lamppost because it's
the
more
light.
The light
is better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, and that is my big concern. Are we really looking at the stuff that we need to do at the beginning?
You're listening to More Talk Radio with Celeste Carey. I am Cecil Prescott, and our guest today is Kathleen Sadat. If you have some thoughts or some ideas, give us a call at 503-231-8187. So when you left the board, mm-hmm, did you leave and give them some parting words or some information?
I wrote an exit report. Mm-hmm. It talked about structure. It talked about interface. It talked about accountability. It talked about not having done things right. I mean, the first chapter is beating the dead horse. Okay, and that's when I go back over the failure to do the things that set up a board that any nonprofit would do, mm-hmm, to set itself up as a board, to, yes, set up a board. Again, we're back to structural issues. I didn't talk about individual people for the most part because they respond to the context they work in.
Yes.
So when I'm talking to a city attorney, they have on their city attorney hat. And what I see that is the city attorney office, not the individual, because the office is driving that individual. And I wish I had sent it to you, Cecil. It didn't occur to me. But Celeste sounds like maybe she's seen it. I don't know.
No, I haven't, but I'm looking to see if it's online.
It should be online.
Yes, I see something right here.
It's the chair's exit report.
Yes, 2016. Chair, yeah. Kathleen Sadat's 2016 exit report.
Yes. Okay. So it gives an analysis of what I see as the problems. And I have talked to several people in the office since then. Mm-hmm. But I don't have any feedback coming to me. And I'm not invited to the regrouping meetings. I think that's pretty interesting. As the only chair who's been there a year, for a whole year, through a lot of turmoil, nobody's said, come in and talk more about this.
So that leads me to think, while it may not have been intentional,
yes,
back then, it may be.
I think it's, very frankly, I think it's the same arrogance. Mm-hmm. I think they read that report and they take from it what they feel like they can manage. And they is a big J, they, yeah, very generalized that? They. Okay. You know, I'm not putting my finger on any particular person. But I think there's a tendency to not want to deal with, some things are really big. What I said was, in the report, or have said since then, you cannot change the police bureau without changing some of the other entities in the city. You cannot.
You think it was the fact that not only were you coherent and cogent about making that point, but the fact that that was a longitudinal challenge for them and bad news, I guess, in that it was much more far-reaching than they wanted to hear, is one of the reasons why you're not getting the feedback. Because this is a city that prides itself on working.
Yeah, I don't tie the two together.
Okay.
I think I'm not getting the feedback because I make noise.
Okay.
Okay, and because there are bones I won't let rest. Okay. So, and I'm not saying feedback. I'm saying I'm not being included in the discussion. Okay, and so that's one thing. I think the whole idea of stuff being far-reaching, yes, I think they don't like that, and they can't handle it right now. It's everything's so out of whack that I'm not sure they'd be able to do very much, except I see right now as an opportunity to do very much.
Yes.
There's a big hole in everything, and what are we going to fill it with?
So when you left, Charlie Hales was mayor. There's a new mayor and also at least one new commissioner on city council. Do you have any, not that you have any personal insight, but do you think that anything will be done, or will it just continue to be the same?
Cecil, if I am absolutely honest, I think they don't know what to do. I think it's a hot potato that nobody really wants to handle. I've talked to Mayor Wheeler a couple of times very briefly. I have been contacted by his chief of staff to set up a meeting and haven't heard back. That's been over a week ago. Meanwhile, I'm having a discussion on another issue with the city attorney. So I think I'm probably seen as a sort of burr under the saddle right now. I don't care. But Kathleen Sadat does not care about Kathleen Sadat having. I don't need another award or another piece of here she is.
Yes.
What I know I bring is some knowledge that's not being used on behalf of improving the relationship between the city and the community. I've already written them at some point in time and said, you're missing a big opportunity, even with the COAB shut down, even though you're redesigning it. You can still hold community meetings where the police and the community talk to each other about what kind of relationship they have. There is nothing to stop that. It's not happening. And there's no reason it cannot happen. And I wrote that and said, I suggest you do this. So what I think is there's not, people are in their positions rather than in their problem-solving mode. And in your positions is very hard to solve problems, especially if you're worried about an election or funding of something or future work.
Yes.
You know, it's interesting to me because when I hear you say that with regard to position, and instead of recognizing that they're supposed to discharge, you know, a certain position, it's though people are missing the point that you don't worry about your future opportunities. You worry about making this a living legacy, you know, the thing that you have before you at the moment.
I agree, but I don't want to focus entirely on the city and the DOJ and the AMAC. The community wasn't there.
Well, that's part of it, yes.
The community wasn't there because presence of the community would have made all the difference in the world, and I believe, in terms of outcome. Now, I will have to credit Dante James, Joyce Harris, Richard Brown, showed up a few times. Great, and when they were there, the board heard them. We just needed more. We didn't need the same people to come every week. We just needed a group of people who could counter the negativity that was in that room regarding that board.
So why Do you think the community was not there?
Probably a dozen or so reasons, but among them, the aura from the beginning of this entity was so contentious that people really didn't want to walk in. The other is, it's not really sexy stuff. It's, unless you're a wonk, you tend to get bored. It's not really exciting. What's exciting, though, is to watch that board work, the times that it did work well, was to watch it work and talk and have discussion on things that were important to the community. So boring, and maybe I got too much to do. You know, especially some of the leadership of various communities, they tend to get overstretched, too many things to do. I can drop this one. But there was a need for ordinary people to be sitting in that room to say to some people, wait a minute, you're trying to hijack this. We need to get back to the issue. Because at some point in time, it becomes personal with me as the chair saying to people, you're out of order, your 3 minutes is up, blah, blah, blah. So I'm seen as picking on these people who are, and I want to introduce here, who, some of whom actually intimidated some of the board members. Mm. Okay?
Yes.
Which, you know, sort of didn't come to light, and I didn't try to bring it to light. I tried to manage it. So when we have one person who is following people around, mostly women of color, following them around with a camera, mumbling to them, and I go to the city attorney and say, what can I do with this? I've been approached by the women. Well, actually, there was, I think, four people, maybe five, who approached me, one of whom was not a woman. And they said, look, this guy is creeping me out. What can we do? So I go to the city attorney. They said, well, you can set up a place where that's the only place you can film. That is under the law. You have the right to do that. So I do this. Not only do I get stuff back from the people who are doing the filming, at least one, several, I get stuff back from somebody on the board, which shouldn't have happened, and I get stuff back from somebody else who is supposed to be representing the community, neither of whom I believe are representing the community. So what I feel like, very frankly, is a couple of white guys really helped hijack this thing, and did a disservice to both the communities of color and the mentally ill. That is my opinion. I'll stick by it every day. That because they protested, the intimidation of women of color on that board, we got an escalation. None of them ever came to me and said, why'd you do that? I tried to explain it to one. Okay, so that's a whole nother level of dysfunction here. Then there's a dysfunction of not being able to put people out without a process, and not being able to say they couldn't come because the judge says you can't keep them out of a public meeting for, you know, based on their past behavior. I think that ruling is, and this is my opinion again, that ruling is based in the assumption that next week they're going to be better.
Yes. And disallowing the fact that there could be some real psychological or organic reasons for their misbehavior. And that's being kind again.
It is being kind.
So when you mentioned that, I'm vaguely familiar or aware of disruption at City Hall meetings, City Council, and City Council excluding people and continuing their work in a room with a camera so people could watch it from another from another room. Was that ever something you considered or brought to your
attention? We considered it toward the end because we couldn't get anything done. My position was that takes us away from the very people we're supposed to be working with.
Yes.
And this is because there are three or four people who are spearheading this. What we needed, and I'll say it again, were people in that room who said, no, there's got to be some balance here. Mm-hmm. That's your position. We haven't heard anything from you about what you really want to see happen. You've not made one policy recommendation or one recommendation that blah, blah. So you need to sit down now and let us talk.
So I would not be surprised if Celeste and I receive emails from these same individuals. Mm-hmm. And who have the loudest mm-hmm. voices. And so I think it's a continuing problem in terms of, you know, how do we measure the voice of the community and yes. how do you get real community participation? I mean, people are challenged by, you suggested, mm-hmm. all sorts of things in mm-hmm. their lives. Mm-hmm. And
Well, you know, we did a couple of community events where we had police officers and community people at a table. There were four. What is the relationship that you want between you, your community, and the police? Mm-hmm. What is the police responsibility in that? What is the community responsibility in yes. that? The fourth question was, what is your responsibility in that? And that was supposed to be put on a card. You take it home, put it up on your mirror so you remember what you're doing. Mm-hmm. That worked. People liked it. They got a chance to talk. The officers got a chance to talk. The public got a chance to talk. I'm saying that if that was continuing right now, you'd be building that relationship that you want to see built. You'd be helping to improve the relationship. But the longer we wait, and the worse things get above us, and the noise that's in the atmosphere right now, yes. the harder it's going to be.
So I would then... Because there's a lot of questions even that come out of that. Like, you know, what's the challenge to that happening? But I would jump to the next track and say, okay, we can see that the talking heads, the heads are just going to keep talking. So what can the grassroots do that can make that happen? And who in your mind would be the biggest barrier to that happening? And I almost think I know what you're going to say, but I want to hear it.
I don't know who. I don't know if there's anyone.
Okay.
Our barrier to that happening is ourselves.
I like that.
There is nothing to stop anyone in this city from calling the mayor's office and saying, what the heck is going on with Coab, and we want to know. So that's one thing that can be done.
The listeners.
The other is to read the settlement agreement, mm-hmm. for those of you who are wonks especially, take a look at it, see where you think changes can be made, and write those changes in an email. Send them to the city attorney's office, send them to the mayor's office. This is about the city of Portland, and we are the city of Portland. These people work for us, and we need to remember that. And if we want our voices to matter, we don't have to be a gang of 200. We can be one. We can be three. And write that letter or make that phone call. The barrier to success here is a lack of accountability. Somebody has to own this. And the person who should own it should be the mayor. But that's in conjunction with the city council. It's the city of Portland. It's not one group or another group over here that's simply making noise. So I'm
wondering, because people feel powerless, and you mm-hmm. very strong that people are not powerless, that there is possibility of people making fundamental change, and that we have access. Looking over your 40...
You can go higher now.
I know. I'm trying to be generous. but in terms of... Because you work, you know, with the city for decades. Mm-hmm. Has there been a shift in terms of attitudes towards people, how people feel about accessibility to the city government, to the powers that be? Are people lazier or not as lazy or stronger, or
just feeling misdirected or not directed?
I think people don't know which direction to go.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know which issue to choose. I believe when I came here and I saw how people had access to their city council and their state legislatures, that is, legislators, that's part of why I wanted to stay.
Yes.
I came here from St. Louis. You couldn't find anybody in St. Louis.
Oh, no, you couldn't. I'll testify.
So that is still there as a potential. It will change if we don't exercise it. I think people are afraid of making themselves targets, and I will say to you, you're already a target. Figure out how you're going to live being a target.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't make any sense to me to be a target and go get in the closet. Somebody just come and pull you out. I'm going to stand here and say, here I am, and this is what I think. As Audre Lorde said, your silence will not protect you. So maybe we just need to come together and split up the agenda, figure out what the agenda is, split it up, and move on. Move toward picking up pieces of that and have groups focus on certain things. I don't want to see the COAB lost because it is an opportunity for that voice. And once it's gone, it's not coming back.
You are listening to Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the metro area, 91.9 in Points East along the Columbia River Gorge, and the Willamette River Valley, it's 104.3, and everywhere else, it is KBOO.FM. This is More Talk Radio with my co-host Cecil Prescott. My name is Celeste Carey. We're here with Kathleen Sadat, and we are talking about the City of Portland and the Department of Justice settlement, the COAB, and what is the COCO?
COCO.
We're speaking with the former chair here, and we're talking about some of the things that can be built, rebuilt, or strengthened to mm-hmm. move forward with this and to actually achieve the things that the city needs to see from that settlement. 503-231-8187, and we'll go to
Paul.
Good morning.
Oh yeah, hey, good morning. I've been following your conversation. I just want to push back a little bit, I guess, on the language that you're using. I wasn't at the COAB meetings you're talking about, or even the recent city council meeting. It just seems like there's sort of an assumption that the people who are causing disruptions or whatever are like dysfunctional, and that there's no political component. Now, I don't necessarily know them. I don't necessarily agree with them, but I just think that might be an assumption that might not be warranted.
Okay, so based on, and then we'll defer to Kathleen, based on what are you saying that we're making an assumption that may not be warranted?
Well, the language you're using was saying that these people who are making disruptions are dysfunctional is basically what you were saying.
Well, in the broad sense of dysfunctional.
Generally, if one has a political agenda, one is able to articulate that agenda.
Let me finish.
Okay,
Let me finish, please. I was there. Okay, so let's just start there. I was there. I asked one of the protesters one night, I said, what are you protesting tonight? He said, well, the COAB's not working. I said, tell me how it's not working. And he said, well, I said, listen, we've sent 50 recommendations over to the Department of Justice. We are working. He says, but they haven't done anything. I said, then you're in the wrong place protesting, aren't you? That's the kind of language that I encountered. He could not articulate what he was protesting in a way that fit with what he was doing. Now, when people come into your meeting and lay on the floor and scream, when there's nothing happened, there's no reason for it. And never say, I would like to see this change. I would like to see this better. When they go to city council, when they have gone to other police meetings, they have been simply disruptive. You're talking to somebody who is a black woman who was surrounded by a group of white people in one of those meetings and called names. So I would consider that a bit dysfunctional.
Now, I totally hear that, and I was going along with what you were saying, and I totally appreciate it, and that the situation you were describing. But then it seemed like you all were enlarging.
Okay, were you there, sir?
No, I said at the outset I was not there.
Okay, so I want you to reflect on that point, and then remember and recall that you just heard from somebody who was there. Okay, so when you're offering pushback, I'm questioning on what basis are you offering, since you didn't have firsthand experience of this, and you're hearing somebody describe what seemed to be, if it was a political performance, then it still did not achieve what would have been a cogent outcome, which is that it would have articulated what its needs were. We didn't get that. That's what she's saying. So what happens is people are left to draw a conclusion, not an assumption, based on what they experienced.
Well, I was just, you're enlarging it to include this.
No, I'm not enlarging it, sir. I'm speaking directly to what Kathleen said. This is what I saw. This is what I asked. This is what happened. And I'm going to defer to Kathleen again.
Yeah, I think that there's a tendency, because we believe in free speech, there's a tendency to pick up the other side and wonder about how free they were to speak. One of my first disagreements, or one of my first discussions, hard discussions, when I took the job, was whether or not certain people would be allowed to speak. And my insistence was, everybody gets their 2 to 3 minutes. And I decided that based on how many people were signed up. They either got 2 minutes or 3 minutes. Everybody, regardless of what they had to say. So nobody was told they could not speak. But I am going to say again, there are people who never brought anything to the conversation. There are people who took their 3 minutes and complained about things that had happened 15 and 20 years ago, about which nobody could do anything. Nobody in that room could do anything. So I'm not saying these people are, I would rather use the word sort of inappropriate or ill-prepared to do what this board was supposed to do. Remember, the priority for the meetings was the work of the board. And into that work, community voices were encouraged.
Okay, Paul, thank you very much for your call. And
all right, thank you.
We will go to our next caller, Brian.
Hey, how are you guys? Listen, it piqued my interest, and I was just kind of getting the temperature of this conversation, and I have a few comments about it. I've been here in Portland for 8 years, and I live downtown, I have seen, I came in after Mr. Chassie was shot and killed, but I've seen constant police abuse, as well as police neglect, and also the homeless situation, and we can go for the massive building projects and the deterioration of the roads, the increased traffic. The bottom line that I see is the reason why people are, quote unquote, getting crazy or dysfunctional, as you put it, at your meetings is because the situation in this city, along with the police force, are out of control. And when you have an out of control situation, you get an out of control populace. And that's my, and in all due respect to you, ma'am, I listen to Joanne Hardesty a lot. And Joanne has been, victimized, by the city, and she's been treated very disrespectful. I think she's probably one of the most intelligent people in Portland, I wish she would. I don't blame her for feeling like she does, But I think in an all good way, Ms. Hardesty would probably run for office, if the field was level. And my opinion is this: is you guys, the city council, the mayor's office now for two mayors. This is the second mayor who's just not doing their job, and they're not making. They're not making the town livable, And for a police force, there's a crisis in this police force, and it's persistent, and there's a low flame on it right now. But at any second, and we all know this because we've seen it, it can just burst up again.
Okay,
and,
so
I mean, I have to
okay,
say,
so hold on for a minute.
One more thing, we have you know, an avowed Nazi who's been cleared on. I mean, that's enough there to say there's a crisis in this in this. You know, police force, and nothing has been done. So when you get people acting nuts, you know, it's because that's the temperature outside of your council room.
Hey, thank you so much.
Yeah,
but
and I'll let you go.
No, don't go. Okay. Just,
I mean, I'm here, but...
Okay. But I don't think you mentioned description of people acting crazy. I don't think anyone at this table used those terms. And
well, I mean, that's what you're implying, though.
Well,
No.
Not at all.
Okay, so let's just go back to the word dysfunctional.
Okay, dysfunctional. Go ahead, Kathleen.
I'm going to use the word disruptive.
Disruptive.
Because I'm going to describe their behavior. I have no idea what their real motivation is. Mm-hmm. What I need for you to understand is, first of all, you're bringing your complaints about the city to the wrong place. I am not an employee of the city. But second
we
of all,
no power here.
I encourage you to go to city council meetings.
But I don't have time.
That kind of nullifies your complaint.
You can watch them on cable TV.
You can
do that if you're really concerned.
I don't have cable because I can't afford it.
Let me finish.
Yeah. What you talked about is an out-of-control environment, and yes, I would agree. But within that environment, if we are going to have some progress towards something that is significant change, we have to exert some kind of limits on how people are attacking other people.
Right.
Now, the group I talked about did not just attack the body with which I work. They attacked the city council and several other committees of the city, which means that these city groups who are doing city business were unable to do the city business. I want to speak to Joanne. Joanne's a friend of mine. And there are things about which we disagree and things about which we agree. And yes, she has been a tremendous positive force in moving forward the issue of how it is the police relate to this community.
Yes.
Please give her kudos. At the same time, if the rest of the community does not step up, including you, sir, if you can find a way, if you have an opinion, then I believe you need to get involved. That's my thing.
But ma'am,
now, calling in on the radio show is not enough.
Let me say this last thing.
Okay.
Analysis is not a recommendation. So you have all this analysis, and I would not disagree with a lot of it. I'd say, yeah, right on. So what's your recommendation?
And how will you move it forward? How will you move it forward?
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. You know what? As far as moving, if I knew how to move it forward, I would be a city. I'd be a member.
No, you don't have to be. All you have to do is be an active citizen, sir.
I am an active citizen. I am very active in the community. You know, my job is community based. Period. You know, but the bottom line goes like this: is like if you and I have to go back to this, and I really want to make this point strongly. If this city was functioning in a rational, fair-minded manner,
you're right.
Okay, we would not you would not have dysfunctional crowds coming to these meetings and making all these disruptions. And if you did, you would have reason to eject them or bar them. But you have rational people who are breaking down because this city and this police force and this whole scenario is completely out of control.
Okay, well, thank you for your call,
okay,
and I think we heard you.
Have a great day.
You too.
Okay, bye-bye.
So, Kathleen.
Armchair analysis is what's bothering me because, you know, the thing is whether these are people who are feeling at the end of the rope and they're being, and I'm going to say dysfunctional again, dysfunctional is not just about mental health. It's about how well you conduct your communication. If somebody can't understand what the freak you're saying, what good is what you've done? And you're totally rational, you know. But we need people like you, sir, who's going to make an analysis to get out and act on it and not just call into a radio show.
I agree. Talk to other people.
Yeah.
You know, I'm watching Facebook, I'm watching discussions, and it's true. People do not know what to do. But I don't know that people are sitting down saying to one another, okay, let's make a list of what we can do.
Yes.
And as long as we don't do that, we run around like chickens with our heads cut off. And we keep saying, what do we do? It must be this problem. It must be that. Every one of us can do something. We just had a big campaign here to mail postcards into Trump. Haven't heard any news back from any of the newspapers. I wonder why. I know that at least several thousands went in, because that's how many went in from Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
So why aren't you writing to the paper asking them to focus on some other things, like what the communities are doing to resist? What is it that's keeping us tied to wondering what Donald Trump's next tweet is, as opposed to what legislation has been introduced in our Congress that is tearing apart every one of the structures that support this society and not replacing it with anything that is humane?
So why is it? I think, you know, I started by saying whether something was intentional or not intentional. Why do you sense people feel so hopeless?
They're afraid.
Yeah.
They're afraid. And we won't say we're scared. I am scared out of my mind. I'm 76 years old. These fools are talking about tripling or quadrupling what it might cost me to have health insurance. That would take most of my retirement income just to pay health insurance.
Then it's not just tripling the cost. They are redefining eligibility standards.
Yes.
Which means even if you had the money, you still may not be eligible.
I got pre-existing conditions.
There you go.
I have several.
There you go.
Let's see if we can get Deanna on
there. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for this conversation. So important. My question is this, and my suggestion. It's clear from everything that you've said, Ms. Sadat, that people don't know what, I mean, I'm going to put it more clearly, that the community coming in to present their fears and anxieties and so forth don't have the education, and I'm not talking about general education, I mean specific education from the committee as to what the role is. And I wonder, and I'm, you know, the rhetorical question, is it always made clear? Because my guess is, I'm going to finish my question here, my guess is that people think that the purpose of their coming is to say what they feel is wrong, and that it might be up to the group who has been appointed and elected and so forth to take the information and then come up with a solution. Could you respond to that?
Sure.
Thanks.
First of all, it was another failure in the beginning, in the setup of the board. And that is, the public was not educated. They were not told what this board was going to do, just like the board members were not told what they were supposed to do in any cogent way. The second thing is that we try to make it clear at every meeting the parameters for participation or what the agenda was going to be. But even outside of the agenda, there was time for people to bring whatever they wanted to bring. And we listened to things that had nothing to do with anything that we could do anything about, and they still got their time. So they didn't have to be educated in the way that you're speaking of, because if some board member heard something in there that could be used, they could take it to their subcommittee, make a recommendation, and bring it back to the full board. So nobody was... I mean, I would agree that the community itself, Portland itself did not educate the citizens of Portland around this settlement agreement, and it would have been helpful to do so.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Kathleen, in the last 10 seconds, are you hopeful or hopeless?
Always hopeful. just tired.
Oh, yes, that's understood. You know, many hands make for the work, the easier work. And so if you want to get involved, we can start with asking the mayor what can be done to make this a working settlement. And get involved. Get up, do what you can. Talk to your neighbors, share your vision, and get active. This is your Community Connection, Radioactive KBOO Portland.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 8:59, and coming up is the Old Mole Variety Hour. Hear all about the People's Republic of Richmond, California, and how they're controlling rents, the constitutional crisis, and Trump's anti-Muslim travel ban, plus defeat in last week's Dutch election of a Trumpist candidate and party. This program is made possible by KBOO members and a grant from Portland 5, presenting an evening with Bassem Youssef, dubbed the John Stewart of the Arab world. He's the creator and host of the first political satire show in the Middle East. Tickets for this all-ages event with Bassem Youssef on Monday, April 3rd at the Newmark Theater are available now at portland5.com.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of A Night with Steve Early, Monday, March 20th at the Portland State University Bookstore in Portland. Steve Early, author of Refinery Town, Big Oil, Big Money, and the Remaking of an American City, will speak and discuss his book, which chronicles the 15 years of successful community organizing to create the progressive transformation of Richmond, California. Again, that's A Night with Steve Early, Monday, March 20th at the Portland State University Bookstore at 1715 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Ballot Measure 57, Oregon's mandatory minimum sentencing law for nonviolent property crimes, accounts for nearly half the women serving prison time in Oregon. And as Oregon legislators consider opening a second women's prison, a new report, Unlocking Measure 57, explains how the development of Oregon criminal laws over the last few decades has widened the net of defendants receiving mandatory